I'm Yvette McGee Brown. It is such an exciting day to be here with all of you, with my friends and former colleagues, to celebrate Ohio's first woman chief justice. You know, as you all know, that.
Thank you.
The chief is extraordinary in so many ways. I had the privilege of being up close and personal. She's wickedly smart, she's funny, she's kind, she's considerate, and most importantly, she cares about the integrity of the judiciary at every level and making real the promise, justice for all. Walking into this building each day when I was on the court felt special. The majesty of the building, the history, the legacy of our beloved Chief Justice Moyer, who inspired me and so many others when we were young lawyers. Today, we dedicate the portrait of another inspirational leader, a woman I am happy to call my friend, a woman of strong integrity, fierce independence, a force dedicated to the rule of law, and respect for the role of the judiciary in our constitutional democracy. She will be missed, but with her portrait, we will have a visible reminder of the legacy she leaves, not just for girls, but for all people who believe in justice and fairness. Now it is my pleasure to introduce former Ohio Secretary of State and Governor Bob Taft. Governor Taft now teaches at the University of Dayton. He met Maureen when she was the Summit County Prosecutor. They were virtual strangers, maybe like an arranged marriage. That professional alliance led to a friendship built on mutual respect and admiration. And Governor, I don't know if the press corps told you this, but they used to love to travel with Maureen on state trips. They said there was nobody more fun, and she would absolutely close the water holes and leave them. But I will have you come and give your remarks about Maureen. She is, as you know, simply a wonderful person.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Yvette, and good afternoon. If it was an arranged marriage, it worked. I am honored to help celebrate the extraordinary career of Maureen O'Connor, who, in my view, has been a model of a disinterested public servant striving to do the right thing and make the right decisions on behalf of the people of Ohio. I was fortunate that Maureen was willing to leave a promising career as judge and prosecuting attorney in Summit County for the uncertain adventure of running statewide for lieutenant governor on a ticket with me. At the time she decided to become my running mate, Maureen was already an accomplished attorney, jurist, and public administrator. Her strong relationship with the law enforcement community and her energetic campaigning in Northeast Ohio were major factors in our victory in November of 1998. As lieutenant governor, Maureen served as my chief policy advisor on criminal justice issues and our liaison to chiefs of police, county sheriffs, and the FOP. She was a member of the cabinet as director of the Ohio Department of Public Safety, one of the largest agencies in state government with more than 3,900 employees. Maureen provided strong leadership for that department and introduced new technology, including O-plates to allow Ohioans for the first time to go online to register their motor vehicles. In the wake of the 9/11 attacks on our country, it was Lieutenant Governor O'Connor who led the state in preparing to deal with the new threat of terrorism. She created an Office of Homeland Security in her department and worked closely with other state agencies as chair of the Ohio Security Task Force and the State Building Security Review Committee to prevent terrorist acts and keep Ohioans safe. Maureen traveled to Ground Zero in support of Task Force One, Ohio's urban search and rescue team that was working amid the ruins of the World Trade Center. Maureen served as our liaison to the Ohio National Guard, and she went the extra mile, in fact, thousands of extra miles, to support them and their missions. She was a real trooper, tramping through the mud in Nicaragua to help the Guard provide aid and rebuilding assistance to the people of that country who had been devastated by Hurricane Mitch. And then traveling with the Guard on missions to Oman, Hungary, and Germany, flying not first class, but grunt class, enduring long flights on C-130s strapped in shoulder to shoulder with the men and women of the Guard. In her role as Lieutenant Governor, Maureen O'Connor was a principled and fearless public servant, rising to meet each new challenges that came her way. I am grateful to have had the chance to work alongside her as her colleague and partner, and it was no surprise to me that Maureen has gone on to play such a distinguished and pioneering role as Justice and Chief Justice of Ohio's Supreme Court. Maureen, thank you for your decades of truly remarkable service. I wish you much happiness and fulfillment in the next chapter of your life.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
It was on one of those trips, Governor, I think somebody offered her, what did they say, you were worth camels, 1,000 head of camels?
I was worth 1,000 camels.
That's right. But there you go. Next up, we have the chief's long-serving former staff attorney, senior staff attorney, Pierce Reed. Pierce is now the director of policy and engagement with the Ohio Innocence Project. Ohio has a national reputation for the largest and most successful Innocence Project in the country. It is affiliated with the University of Cincinnati Law School. Previously, Pierce served as the chief's senior judicial attorney, and he joins us today to speak on behalf of all of the staff who've worked for the chief. And behave yourself. Come on.
Well, now I feel like I shouldn't behave myself. Well, good afternoon, everyone. My first day with Maureen O'Connor came on February 14th, 2005. And I remember at the time thinking it was somewhat funny, maybe ironic, that I would be starting a relationship with her on Valentine's Day. Little did I know that I would eventually fall in love with her. Thank you. My caveat was just going to be that that's platonic love. I don't want to create a scandal. We share one celebrity crush, which is Benicio del Toro, so that's the only reason other things didn't happen, I suspect. She can do much better, though. But what I hope to leave you with today is not so much an understanding of what her service means in terms of leadership and the development of the law, but something that I think is so misunderstood about the chief, and that's her as a person. In the two decades that she's been here, she's been served by 4 executive assistants and 18 attorneys. We come from very different backgrounds, different educations, different parts of the state or the country, different politics, different religion. Collectively, we are the most diverse staff to have ever served a justice of this court. And it's a testament to the chief that she not only hired such a motley crew, but that she tolerated us and tolerated us so well for so long. But I tell you that because the testament part is that it establishes something you should know up front. Her litmus test for hiring was never through a political lens. It was basically a 3-part test. Do you have a reasonable degree of intelligence and, more importantly, common sense? Do you have a genuine desire to serve the public? And are you willing to take your work, but not yourself, seriously? In the very first opinion I drafted for the chief, she included a line that reads, "A fundamental premise of American democracy is that government exists to serve the people." The chief embodies that statement, that all of us, both she and her staff, were servants to the people of Ohio, and that we should not only earn our paychecks each and every week, but that we should earn the trust and respect of the people. To her, that is a matter of simple fairness. And although we worked really hard in chambers, she always treated us with fairness and respect and compassion. The work was important to her, but over those years, life goes on for all of us. Many of us went through the illness or death of a parent. Many of us had family members, whether they were children or partners or other relatives who were sick. And she insisted that no matter how much work was to be done, that at that point, our place was with our loved ones. And that was true for everyone on her staff, regardless of position. And it was true for everyone on staff, regardless of what family they came from, even in the days when the law did not recognize everyone's family. Maureen O'Connor always did. And she did that with genuineness and respect and compassion. Because for Chief Justice O'Connor, equality is not a privilege, it's just a matter of fairness. And that deep belief in fairness is integral to everything she does. That sense of fairness is why she worked so hard to make sure that every Ohioan, regardless of race or color or gender or identity or orientation or ability, believed that they too belonged in this building, whether as an applicant for a job, a visitor looking at the beauty and majesty of this place, or as a litigant. And she led, as in all things, by example. One of the things that was most important to the chief was making sure that law students in Ohio got some practical experience, not just doctrinal understanding from academic courtrooms. So she developed an externship program that ultimately brought 233 law students from every law school in the state into her chambers. And although those students' work may have been supervised by lawyers, it ultimately was considered by her. And she made sure that every law student felt welcome here, and she made sure that every job applicant felt welcome here, including in her chambers. It's surprising to me that that was such a big deal at the time. But for the chief, that was just another matter of fairness. And when she became chief, she happened to hire an attorney who became the first African-American lawyer to ever serve a chief justice in this court. 200 years, and Maureen O'Connor not only opened that door, she opened it and embraced that lawyer, who not only served with distinction, but has continued to serve and to lead in the profession, as well as to reach back to others so someday they may follow here. That, too, was not a political or cultural statement. It was just a matter of fairness. I remember being surprised when The Chief Justice embraced Justice McGee Brown when she joined the court as the first African-American woman to serve here. I understood that it was historic, but to be front page news because a white Republican embraced a black Democrat who came to this court already established as an outstanding trial court judge, an amazing leader, and an incredible manager. But nonetheless, that evidently shocked the Dispatch and any number of other people, which just tells you that they didn't really know Maureen O'Connor at all. Because for people who know her, they know that's just the kind of person she is. So above all else, I want you to remember two things. That sense of fairness, whether you love her, as I do, or have other feelings for her, as some of you may, know that everything she's done here has been based not on what her party or her donors or even her staff thought was the right thing to do. It was based on her sense of fairness. But the other thing that I want you to remember is that she has an incredible sense of compassion. And I think that that shocks many people. And I'll confess, my favorite meme of the chief is the one, it's a photo of her taken right in this position, but instead of these beautiful blue eyes that she has, red laser beam lights are coming out, and they look like they're directed downward, reducing whoever it is to a pile of dust. But beneath those bright red laser beam eyes beats one of the biggest hearts I have ever seen. A heart bigger and stronger than even her ballot name. I tell you that because the chief not only respects but loves most of the employees in this court. She loves all of the employees in this court. And that's genuine too. She knows the names of every man and woman in the maintenance department and the housekeeping department, just as she knows the people's names in the corner offices and the ones who have JDs after her name, after their name. She does that because she has fundamental respect and compassion for every person in this building and truly appreciates what they do to serve the people of Ohio. And yeah, she can be tough, but always fair. And in those 12 and a half years, there were very few times that I saw her misty-eyed. But each and every time that I did, it was because of the death or tragedy that befell some member of this court. And it wasn't just when there was a Chief Justice who died. It was when librarians and reporters and others died. And those misty eyes were just as genuine and sincere for those people as they were for everyone else. And that's what I want you to take away from my remarks today. Fair and compassionate, the two things that are all too often overlooked, and an incredible leader and servant, and someone I truly love. And I bet today, even Justice Lanzinger, who I see, would agree, she is going to leave the court with a huge void, not voidable,
Wow, Pierce, that was amazing and all true. I couldn't even believe the flack we got for being on the front page of the Dispatch. I mean, but you never want those laser eyes focused on you because they will reduce you to crumbles. Let me introduce Michael Binger. He is the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for the National Center for State Courts. He has served as the top state court administrator in Missouri, South Dakota, and as administrative director at the Supreme Court of Ohio. Can't imagine why you left. Mike has worked closely with the Chief Justice here at the court and on a number of national projects in his new role. Bringing the national perspective, Mike Binger.
I have had those eyes focused on me many times, yes. Chief Justice O'Connor, members of the court, honored guests, friends of the chief and family. Can I tell my story? Mm-hmm. So.
Just remember the audience.
I remember the audience. No, former Justice McGee Brown was going to make a presentation to the court in a conference, and she and I and some staff were sitting outside the conference room, and I said, you know, I hope you don't feel like you're being thrown to the lions. And she said, no, I don't feel like that. She said, I know you're there and all the staff is there to support me. And I said, no, you misunderstand. We're staff. We root for lions. So there was this big roaring laugh. And afterwards, as the chief and I were walking down to her chamber, she said, I don't know what was so funny, but I hope it was damn funny because they heard it in the conference room. As I begin, Chief, first of all, Mary McQueen asked me to send her warm thanks and regards to you. My assignment this afternoon is to speak to the Chief's national work. But then national work should include international work, for the Chief has been a welcomed guest and speaker at judicial events across the world. She has also been one of those people who is fearless. She can claim to have swam with whale sharks in the Philippines and great white sharks off of South Africa. If I were to combine the list of her accomplishments, we would be here for quite some time. The Chief's footprint is significant beyond the borders of this state and indeed across the globe. I thought, therefore, that rather than drone on about a list of accomplishments, it might be better for me to use a single example to demonstrate the Chief's breadth and manner of work and her leadership. Every Monday afternoon when I was the administrative director here at the court, the chief and I would meet. The discussions would be wide-ranging. They might be touching on the business of the court. We shared an interest in international affairs. We talked about family. We talked about politics, and so on and so on. But they would almost always end with her asking the question, what could we be doing better to improve the administration of justice? And so one Monday afternoon in 2015, we turned our attention to the opioid crisis in Ohio. We started with a discussion focused on Ohio, but it quickly morphed into a discussion about the region and about the nation. We talked about how the border of the state was largely meaningless in confronting such a crisis, how it called for cooperation between courts, state agencies, and state leaders across the region. That conversation eventually led to a convening in Cincinnati of state leaders across and from the Midwest to discuss the crisis. At that event, we had open and candid conversations about how we could better respond. The courts, the treatment community, medical systems, law enforcement, children's services, so on and so on. The crisis wasn't an individual crisis. It was an individual crisis, a family crisis, a community crisis, a state crisis, a regional crisis, and indeed a national crisis. What was perhaps most beneficial about that meeting was that for the first time, key players from across the region actually came together and met each other. had the opportunity to talk to each other. And even here in Ohio, we learned that key players had never really talked about the crisis. We had all remained encamped in our silos, in our compartments of government. Governor Kasich, you spoke at that conference quite eloquently and quite urgently about the need for leadership to solve problems and to better the lives of their fellow citizens. Under the chief's leadership, the conference led to the creation of the Regional Judicial Opioid Task Force, or the Regional Judicial Opioid Initiative, which received national recognition and even significant support from the U.S. Department of Justice. But it did not end there. The National Judicial Opioid Task Force followed during the chief's time as president of the Conference of Chief Justices. It was an effort that was embraced by all of the chief justices and state court administrators of the nation. The chief encouraged, some might say co-opted, one might argue persuaded, some could even describe coercion in getting her good friend, Chief Justice Loretta Rush of Indiana, to co-chair that task force. The results are still being felt. But it didn't end there either. The National Judicial Opioid Task Force created a model for yet another major effort by the Conference of Chief Justices and Conference of State Court Administrators, the recently completed National Judicial Task Force examining the state court role in dealing with individuals who are suffering from serious mental illness and substance abuse disorders. For too many people, the justice system is, in fact, the de facto mental health and treatment system of America. And many people come into court and into courts that are unprepared to help them. It would, of course, be an overstatement to attribute all of this to the single person and to Chief Justice O'Connor. There were lots of hands involved. There were many judicial leaders across this nation that stepped up to help. But I do think it is fair to say that through her commitment, her creativity, her leadership, her vision, her persuasion, her laser eyes, which can be considerable at times, she accomplished something quite remarkable. She reset a conversation about the role of state courts in the effective administration of justice. And so a conversation on an otherwise obscure Monday afternoon blossomed into something quite impactful. And it has reached well beyond the moment and well beyond the borders of this state. Chief Justice O'Connor has the unique ability to change the conversation and to invite, or perhaps insist, that others join her on that journey. In his book, Tribe, on Homecoming and Belongings, Sebastian Younger explores the challenges that soldiers often face coming back into civilian life. He notes that the qualities so critical to military culture, selflessness, commitment to others, putting the collective good forward, are sometimes strangely absent in our broader society. And he goes on to observe that if one of our founders, Thomas Paine, sought for anything from the trials and tribulations of the Revolution, it was that those same qualities would endure to create a society that was, in Younger's words, more just, more egalitarian, and more deliberately fair to individuals. I can't think of a description that better encapsulates Chief Justice O'Connor's 40 years of service to the people of Ohio, across the nation, and indeed across the globe, than that description of more just, more egalitarian, more deliberately fair to individuals. From opioids to children and families, to examining fine fee and bail practices, to innovation in civil justice, and so on and so on, she has constantly looked for ways to reset the conversation, both in her formal initiatives, but equally importantly, in her daily interactions. Justice is not a distant and disconnected concept, something that is ethereal to most people. It's intimately tied to humanity and all of its struggles. And it is, in the words of James Madison, the very essential purpose of government. I think the chief saw it as her responsibility to push government, to push courts, to push others, to think about ways of doing better, and equally importantly, being better. Attentive to guarding the rule of law, but also greatly focused on the myriad of people and the human problems that courts confront every hour of every day, and to do so justly and with thoughtfulness and deliberate fairness. Chief Justice O'Connor, thank you for your years of service. Thank you for your friendship. We wish you all the best.
My friend, Governor John Kasich. He took office at a difficult economic time for the state and led its comeback. In his presidential run in 2016, he focused on unifying Americans rather than dividing them. Today at the Kasich Company, he continues to champion the great potential of our citizens to make positive impacts in their own communities. It was in that spirit of cooperation and service to all Ohioans that he and Chief Justice O'Connor led their respective branches of government. With colleagues in the legislature, they exemplified the importance of America's system of checks and balances. They modeled respect, civility, and a willingness to achieve common goals through compromise. Governor John Kasich.
I don't have any notes. I've just been thinking a lot about this. And one of the things that happened is when Mike Grothaus, my legal counsel, would say, the judge wants to come and see you. And I'd think, oh, no, now what? Be honest with you. I was also invited to be here tonight, and the word came down, don't not speak longer than 5 minutes or she'll yank you off the podium. Okay, so but, you know, I was trying to, first of all, I was glad I was here to hear these three gentlemen. I thought they did a fantastic job in summing up the judge. And grandkids who are here, I'm gonna tell you one thing. Your grandma, she's cool, okay? She's very cool, and you gotta get to know her. I've had people, you know, I've had a couple portraits unveiled, just like Bob Taft has, and people come and they speak, and you wonder, what do I really want somebody to say? And then a couple people around me, because of Lynn Tolenson, started sending me talking points and notes, and I'm looking at it, longest lady ever been elected, and you know, and I'm looking at all these things. She'd been the judge, and is that really we're going to remember? I think we need to know those things, and we make notes. What you're talking about with the opioid crisis, what a big deal, and the way she's treated her staff, and the way she worked with Bob after 9/11, and all that. There's some things there I didn't know. I was thinking, what am I going to say? And I was lucky enough, Maureen, to stumble across an interview with you at the local newspaper. It wasn't very long. It was about maybe 2 minutes. And it was about the issue of courage. I think a lot about courage and what it is. You know, courage is walking off the curb into the traffic when you know you're going to get hit. Courage is walking into the fire when you know you may not come out alive. But you do it because deep inside, and with the guidance of our Lord, the guidance of dear friends, we say we're just going to do it. We just have to do it. If we don't do it, we're going to always look back and regret the fact that we didn't stand up when we could have. Then I kind of think, Maureen, I think about your mom and dad, and I think about my mom and dad. In that interview, Maureen said, she laughed. Same kind of laugh I've had. Oh, that took courage to stand up against this bully or that whatever, okay? And she laughs, and she says, courage. It didn't take any courage. I think we need to go back and think about how her mother and father and the people around her raised her. Because being willing to take the heat, it's just natural. So when we say, oh, well, look how much courage, she looks at it and laughs. She says, I had no choice. This is the way I feel. This is the way I was raised. We need more of that in our country today, don't we? We need it in politics, we need it in business, we need it in religion and sports and everything. People who are willing, based on a deep feeling, to walk off the curb into the traffic and not really worry about what happens. Because you see, that is the legacy. She's a very tough lady, okay? And I loved all the stuff about her heart, and she's the longest, you know, longest serving woman in Ohio history. Why? Because people are not stupid. People have a great sense of the innards of a person. And they knew that she was tough, but they knew she was fair, and they knew she had a good heart. And they probably knew that she had courage. I don't follow all the ins and outs of Ohio politics, the legislature, whatever, thank God. but I'm sort of somewhat aware of the controversy surrounding this whole thing of gerrymandering and redistricting. We tried to stop it. We just think it ought to be a situation in this country where you don't have to appeal to extremes in order to get elected. You know, that you don't have to go way out on the fringe, because we know that's not where we all live. We live here in kind of the middle, the left and the right. We don't live out here. And so what did she try to do? Let's have some fair districts. Let's have some competition. Let's get a House and a Senate that's going to be more competitive and able to deal with the problems that our state has. And it's just not Ohio. It's a whole country that flounders around this. She decided to stand up. For most of the people that I know, there's no standing up, because that's going to be a problem, because I'm going to make enemies, because I'm going to take the heat. Folks, in our lives, maybe we should think of her sort of as a role model, you know? Let's think of her having the courage and the willingness to follow her conscience and step onto the street, off the curb. And maybe all of us can think about that in some way. Not to go running away and hiding in the shadows. And everybody can't do what she does, okay? She was born or raised this way, probably both. But we can all think about what we can do to honor her. That portrait, we can look at it. We can think about what she represented. And we'd be inspired by it. I got to tell you, I am. I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have great respect for her. I don't need to go making any more speeches at unveilings of portraits. I wanted to be here. And I wanted to be here because they always say, well, we had our differences. I really don't remember what they are. All I know is I was delighted when I saw her, because I was never confused about what she wanted and never confused about telling me how I was wrong or whatever it was. It didn't matter. Because I'll tell you something, I really do. I just have such strong feelings and positive emotions about this great lady. So grandchildren, someday it's going to come when you're going to have to stand up. It's not always easy. Sometimes your friends will be mad, or sometimes your teacher will say, well, you spoke out of turn. But just remember your grandma. She didn't have the fear, ever the fear, to do the right thing. She's a great lady. And thank the Lord we have her. And also thank the Lord for those that don't like her. She ain't going away. God bless.
Wow. That was awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Governor Kasich. You're right. You never have to worry about where she stands. And you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, Martin Luther King said, you never remember the slights and the insults of your enemies, but you always remember the silence of your friends. And so what you said was right on. She's got courage, and the rest of us should think about that when there comes a time where you need to stand up for what's right. Now, next, we have Mary Amos Osberger. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Ohio State Bar Association. The OSBA is the statewide professional association for Ohio lawyers dedicated to promoting justice and advancing the legal profession. In its 140-year history, she is just the fourth executive and the first woman to lead the organization. Mary came to the bar as legislative counsel, continuing on in an accomplished career in public service, having served in leadership roles in both the legislative and executive branches. Mary became CEO in 2013 during the chief's first term. She has been honored to work with her ever since on shared efforts to advance the bench, the bar, and access to justice. Mary?
Chief Justice O'Connor, justices, on behalf of myself and the Ohio State Bar Association, it is a great honor to be here today to celebrate our Chief Justice's historic term in office, an accomplished career in public service that spans more than 35 years. I believe it was the Greek statesman Pericles who said, "What you leave behind is not what's engraved in stone monuments, but what is woven into the lives of others." And we've heard a lot about that today. Chief, as we dedicate a fitting tribute to your service as by virtue of this portrait, the true monument to you is in the people you've inspired and the difference you have made. I am just one of the countless people on whom you've made a lasting impression. It's hard to believe that it was 100 years ago this year that Justice Florence Allen was sworn in as the first woman on the Ohio Supreme Court. And while she paved the way for women on this bench, it's also remarkable that Ohio wouldn't see another woman elected to the Supreme Court for more than 30 or 60 years. As a fellow female lawyer working in public service in the 90s, it was an incredible moment for me personally to see you sworn in as the first woman to lead our state's judicial branch of government. Little did I know that only a few years later I would have the opportunity and privilege to work so closely with the chief when I became the first woman CEO of the Ohio State Bar Association. I think the highest compliment that I can pay is that while you were the first, it has been so natural that you should wield that gavel because of the strong leader you are, your gender aside. Keeping our courts running during a global pandemic, working to defeat State Issue 1, these are two of the more memorable and challenging examples of successful collaborations between the bench and bar during your term. And it was through these efforts that we got to see your hallmark grace under pressure, fearless advocacy, and strength of character on full display. And over the last 12 years, you've left an enduring mark not only there, but on so many of the issues of our day that impact access to justice. Court modernization, technology, the opiate crisis, as Mike talked about, racial equity, criminal justice reform, the quality of legal education, and my list goes on and on too. On each, we've admired how you roll up your sleeves, get smart people and diverse perspectives around the table, try to seize the moment, and give us a little nudge with that laser vision now and then. And while you've made no secret of the fact that you would like some more time on these topics, you can be proud that your work has undoubtedly moved us further along the arc towards justice. And what better monument can an excellent lawyer, public servant, and human being ask for? So, Chief, we thank you. We thank you for your service, and it's great to be part of this celebration today.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mary. That was awesome. Now we're getting to the moment we're waiting for. Attention to detail is important to the Chief Justice. When it came to selecting an artist, she wanted top quality artistic talent whose work would elevate the already exceptional collection in the building she has respected and cared for all these years. Paul Wise is internationally renowned. He has painted notable government, corporate, academic, and religious figures. You ever meet anybody like Chief Justice O'Connor? You can read more about him in your program, but I'm pleased to introduce him to you now, Paul Wise.
Thank you for the kind introduction. Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices, Governors Kasich and Taft, and distinguished guests, it is indeed a great honor and a pleasure to present this portrait of Justice O'Connor to the court today. I'd like to first just thank everyone who helped make this possible, the incredible staff here, the Ohio State Bar Association, and especially the Chief Justice for trusting me with the task of painting her portrait. It's a little strange to start talking about a portrait that nobody can see yet. But nonetheless, let me try to give a bit of background and to answer a few of what seem to be universal questions that I end up fielding at an unveiling like this. The number one, by far, most asked question is, you're probably thinking it right now, so how long did that take? So to answer, last December I reached out to the court in the event that there might be a justice requiring a portrait, and very shortly after, I received an email directly from Chief Justice O'Connor, and that was the beginning of a fascinating year-long endeavor to create the portrait that you're about to see. During that year, we spent many creative meetings reviewing ideas. She spent a lot of time posing for me. I put forth numerous sketches and plans, most of which were rejected. We also had a lot of long and sometimes drinky lunches where we chatted casually about just a number of unrelated things like our house renovations and our estate sale shopping and anything else that was topical. All said and done, the final inspiration for the portrait springs from an actual session of the court in which she was captured in gesture by the court photographer. This was all great, but the photo she wanted to use was cut off at the waist, so I went to work calling on the muses of anatomy and structure and filled in the blanks that were missing in the photo. And the photo was really great, but also in it she was holding her cell phone and a mask in her right hand, and her left hand was just not there. So again, I had to fill in those blanks. I also made the assumption that her shoes were going to be black in the portrait. But halfway through, she suggested something else, something a bit more upbeat, which I won't give away yet. But that also had to be reinvented, as did the position of her absolutely gorgeous diamond ring. So Governor Kasich, you were right. She was never shy to say that something was not to her liking. But in the end, I'm so grateful for that process of working, and I absolutely loved her artistic sense and capacity to know what was going on with the portrait, and she led me at every step of the way. So after working on all of these details, I turned my attention to the background. I think we both wanted to show this room and the to portray it realistically. This room is just incredible and was such a joy to paint and to find a way to make it feel like Justice O'Connor was set in this room when you view the portrait. And if you're sitting at certain places in the room, you'll see that the curtains and the gold work will sometimes just kind of look like they're merging into the painting. Another question I often get is, well, why not just take a photo? So I guess the most obvious answer is permanence. The differences between the medium of photographic print and formal painting are clear. The durability of fine linen stretched over solid wood is proven and time-tested. You can just visit any museum and find master paintings from the 1400s that have survived that test of time. Printed photos, however, quickly fade, crack, wrinkle, warp, in as little as a few years. Also, oil paint, hopefully in the hands of a skilled artist, can do so much more. Painters have, for centuries, used this medium to create incredible colors, realistic effects through layering, glazing, and clever brushwork. A life-size oil painting can convey a sense that we are there in the room with the subject and that we are part of the moment and experience of the sitter. A photo just cannot come close to that. I've done my humble best to exploit these capacities of this medium to capture the right mood, the right feeling, and to convey the importance of this moment. In my experiences with the chief over the past year, I've had the great pleasure of discovering her keen intellect, her discerning and artistic eye for detail, and moreover, her pride in having become the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Ohio, and even more so to be the first woman to hold that position. She has approached this portrait with loving persistence, and I have thoroughly enjoyed the process of getting to know her and uncovering the messages she wished to convey with this painting. The Chief's search for excellence and originality even extended to the framing of this piece. From the very beginning of our conversations, she expressed a vision to have this portrait be freestanding, that is to say, not hung on a wall like all of the other portraits in this building. So I guess today we could call this a public standing rather than a public hanging. Since freestanding frames just don't, you don't see them in a store, you don't see them at Target, I worked closely with her on an original design for this frame, which takes inspiration from the Art Deco architecture of the outside of the court building as seen from the river. I then worked closely with a master craftsman named Scott Beck, who engineered and built the frame using solid walnut grown and milled in Geauga County, Ohio, and sawn and dried for 20 years in Middlefield, Ohio. It is all 100% local Ohio walnut, and it is inspired from the wood work that is in this incredible courtroom. It is also made and finished all by hand. I'd like to conclude by thanking Chief Justice O'Connor once more for the opportunity. I can only hope that my humble work duly honors your career and serves to highlight the historic nature of your tenure on the Supreme Court. You have all my admiration and respect, and I offer my sincerest congratulations and best wishes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. The one thing we know is he has courage. I couldn't imagine trying to paint the Chief Justice. So 20 years or more, there was used to be a song called I'm Every Woman. And that would be Maureen. You've heard about her professional career, but what you probably don't know is this woman got married in law school, had two children while she's going to law school, and prepared their baby food fresh because the store-bought food wasn't enough. And so probably her greatest title, I think, is as Coco, which is what she has her grandchildren call her. So I am pleased to introduce the grandchildren of Coco. In addition to everything else, she cooks breakfast, fresh squeezed orange juice, takes them on trips. I just don't know how she does it. But Xavier Kipp and Henry Kipp, if you would come up, please. If you could join Paul beside the work, Chief Justice O'Connor describes both of you, and I've heard about you since your birth, as brilliant, funny, and kind, with kind being the most important thing to your grandmother. Xavier is in the fifth grade and Henry is in the fourth grade. They are the oldest of Chief Justice O'Connor's six grandchildren. Their siblings are in the audience. Xavier's sisters, Mallory and Marin, both soon to be 8 years old, and Henry's brothers, Waylon, who just turned seven, and Finn, who at 4 and a half is already his own man, I've heard. So gentlemen, Xavier and Henry, if you would please unveil the artwork. amazing. It's amazing. Good subject. No, not your turn, no. Oh, wow. The Supreme Court of Ohio's Commission on the Thomas J. Moyer Ohio Judicial Center assists and advises the court regarding the preservation of the artistic, architectural, and historic integrity and public use of the Moyer Judicial Center. Representing the commission, our next speaker is the Fine Arts Chair, Justin Nigro. He is the Operations and Public Affairs Director for the Ohio Arts Council, a position of the Executive Branch Council he has held for 8 years. Previously, Justin worked in the Ohio Senate. With his service to the commission, he has served all three branches of Ohio government. With this broad view of government and his ministerial duty to maintain the art and architecture of the building, please welcome Justin Nigro.
Thank you, former Justice McGee Brown, for that introduction. It's a hard act to follow. If a picture says 1,000 words, I don't know what a portrait says. Maybe Paul can tell us, but at least 1,000,000. Chief Justice O'Connor and Justices, I'm honored to appear this afternoon on behalf of the Commission on the Thomas J. Moyer Ohio Judicial Center. As former Justice McGee Brown mentioned, the Commission was created in 2005 to advise the court regarding the preservation of the artistic, architectural, and historic integrity of this beautiful building. Consistent with the duties of the Commission, we, as its members, review and make recommendations for design standards and the selection, placement, and preservation of artwork here in the center. Allow me to share some brief history. In 1933, when this building was completed, the world was a different place, viewed through a different lens. In fact, the building was actually built for a different purpose. It was then known as the Department's Building to house the Industrial Commission, the State Library, and 10 different state departments. The Ohio Judicial Center originally contained 61 distinct murals, a number of which surround us here today in the courtroom. All of the building's original artwork was preserved when the building was renovated to be the permanent residence of the Supreme Court of Ohio. The commission recognized that the original murals reflect the activities and history of the building's original occupants. In bronze, the bas-reliefs in the Grand Concourse are 18 famous and influential Ohio politicians, all men, who had served in national offices as United States presidents, Supreme Court justices, and speakers of the U.S. House of Representatives at the time the building was built. After the renovations were completed, the portrait of Chief Justice Thomas J. Moyer, for whom this building has been named, was accordingly added to the display in the Grand Concourse, recognizing his nearly 24 years of leadership of the judicial branch of the government in Ohio. The commission began discussions a few years ago about how to continue to preserve and honor history, how to pay tribute to the work of this court as its permanent resident and occupant, and how to best recognize the importance of the judicial history being made today to include women and people of color who did not appear in the halls of justice in the early 1900s. As a result, they were overlooked in the artwork or by those commissioning it at the time. That brings us to today. When the commission learned of this portrait, we were excited that we would potentially receive the work of an artist of international renown, Paul Wise, painting such an historically significant figure. It would be an important addition to the collection. Among the many lovely and historic works you will see in this building, regrettably, you will see few depictions of women and even fewer of people of color. To those ends, just last week, we dedicated a mural depicting a century of women and the law that will be displayed in the Civic Center lobby of the building. That mural reflects the women's suffrage movement in the early 1900s and brings the story forward to today by depicting all 13 women who have served in this court in the past century. Today, consistent with the efforts the commission has undertaken, I'm honored to stand before you as we recognize the first woman to serve in the position of Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Moreover, she is the longest serving statewide elected woman in the history of Ohio. And of course, that person is Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. On behalf of the commission, as its Fine Arts Chair and Ohio Arts Council representative, it is my great and humble privilege to accept the donation to this honorable court of the portrait of Chief Justice O'Connor. The commission members, acting in our advisory capacity, unanimously recommended that this significant piece be displayed in the Grand Concourse. Chief Justice O'Connor has served the state of Ohio and the legal profession honorably throughout her entire career. She is an historic figure in Ohio, just as the men represented by the bas-reliefs and portrait, and who are currently on display in the Grand Concourse. She will be the first woman, and the Grand Concourse is a place of firsts. Mindful of Ohio history, the commission members felt in our discussion it only fitting that the stature of the subject and the stature of the artist be permanently housed and displayed in this historic space. In closing, portraits as art forms can act as symbols and reminders to those viewing them. In this instance, you will find many interpretations. For example, an encapsulation of the accomplishments of all women in the state of Ohio, a sign for attorneys who practice that women are valued here, a demonstration to school children and all Ohioans that they are equal in the eyes of the law. And ultimately, this portrait will serve as a symbol and reminder that Chief Justice O'Connor, by her intelligence, dedication, and determination, opened doors for women to serve at the highest levels of government in Ohio and in our country. Thank you.
So she's standing behind me, which means I gotta let her come up quickly. I'm supposed to tell you about all of the things that she's done, and you guys all know that already, but you said something that resonated with me. She did open the doors for so many of us. She opened the door for me and for Justice Stewart to be here. I mean, I wouldn't be here if the chief hadn't called me one morning and demand that I consider this. And I mean, it was a demand. And so the fact that she cares about making sure that our state government is representative is maybe one of the most important things about her, and I'm so glad to call her my bestie and my friend, Chief Justice O'Connor.
There's another picture for the group.
Thank you. Please. Thank you. Please. We're already over time, and I can see my 4-year-old grandson over there squirming like a worm. So good afternoon. I think that the response to my portrait, that you all agree that Paul Wise is a magnificent artist. Yes. Truly, truly magnificent. I've had the good fortune to go to a studio, obviously, and there you see the faces and the experience of so many talented people that he is painting or has painted, and I was humbled to be among them. Thank you, Paul. Paul is someone who works with conversation. He's collaborative, and it shows. Our goal was for a piece that says, not all chief justices look alike. And most importantly, I wanted him to capture my smile. If you look at other portraits in this building, you don't see a lot of smiles. I want my smile to show people my sense of humor. I want the staff, as they pass by, to read into that smile and remember that I truly like them. I know the work they do, every single one of them. I want the Supreme Court staff to remember that I respect them and their work. It is the little things. Attention to detail is so important here. Just as important if you're researching a decision or caring for this one-of-a-kind building. It's a court for sure, but it has a magnificence about it that makes it so much more. It represents our past while celebrating the history that we make every day. We could not duplicate this building, so we must care for the gift that we have been given. It requires a lot of work, and for that, I thank the facilities team for their dedication. It's easy to recognize the people who are always recognized, and I try to do that too. Many detail-oriented people have come here to serve Ohio with unique talents. Because of that, I never worry. And even in this place of very serious business, I want them to remember that my feelings for them are genuine. There was a sense of humor, and not just sometimes. We often laughed. In addition to the amazing staff, for which I will always be thankful, there are many others I would like to thank for this day, for the opportunity to provide a lifetime of service to Ohio. I would be nothing if it weren't for my parents and my grandparents. The opportunities that they provided for me and my siblings, they told us that we could do anything, and they provided the means to do so. There were no limits. There were 6 girls and 2 boys in my family, children. They stressed the importance of education, and with education, the opportunities were limitless. As I said, we are 8 siblings, and I can tell you, there is no gender discrimination in a big family. Not only could you do anything, but you were expected to do everything. Running a family of 10 meant there were lots of chores, and we were expected to do our chores, and we were expected to get good grades. Hard work and education, kindness and devotion to God. We knew the values, and we have carried them our whole lives to places like this. Yes, I was fortunate for the family I was born into. My parents taught us, and that was a gift. It was not of our making, and we were required to help others who didn't have the same good fortune as we did. My maternal grandmother was a social worker, and I can remember that she always seemed to have folks who were down on their luck or needed some help in her life and therefore in our lives. It was a great example that I don't know that I appreciated at the time, especially when you had to give up Saturdays to make ready housing for women who were being released from prison. But that's what we did, and we did it because we were asked to do it. I'm sorry my parents and my grandparents couldn't be here today. They would be proud. I'd like to thank my family, those who've traveled here, and those who could not. Through siblings, we get experiences we might not otherwise have. They enrich and fortify us. They keep us humble, and I can tell you that for sure. So thanks to my brother Marty and his wife Elaine for making the trip, and Patrick and Kathy, who both just retired, by the way. As siblings, we've experienced lots of milestones together. I'm thankful we are sharing this one. Soon we will be discussing the next reinvention of ourselves. My sister Liz, who is here today, is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and a brilliant chef, but her real claim to fame are the champion wire-haired dachshunds that she raises. That's where my dog, Martini, came from. Many of you met my dog, who was with me for more than 15 years in this building, often here in the building, and often a conversation starter with children who visited the court, especially when we held Bring Your Child to Work Day. They wanted to see Martini much more than they wanted to hear from me. The kids definitely look forward to it year after year. Liz is not the only chef in the family. My son Ed is also a Culinary Institute graduate and is in charge of some of the catering events at the University of Akron. You've already met his sons Henry and Waylon and Finn. And Waylon and Finn's mom, Stephanie, is also with us today. Henry's mom, Cheryl, couldn't make it, and my son, Alex, couldn't be here. But his beautiful children are here instead. And Xavier, Mallory, and Marin's mom, Sarah, is with us as well. Sarah is a teacher and a very successful mother, and I have been blessed to have this wonderful family. Several of my sisters also could not make it. One of them, Bridget, don't feel bad for her. She and her husband are spending a month enjoying the island of Bali. I can't say enough about my court family. I always credit success with hiring good people by listening to them and letting them do their jobs. Hiring smart people extends to all judicial attorneys. My current staff is exceptional, and I will miss them and our daily interaction. I'd like to introduce Amy Irvin, if you'd stand up, Sarah Stafford, John Shelb, and Tori Gooder. I've also been extremely fortunate to have the best executive assistants in the business, Jill Wynn, Tim Anderson, and now Myla Danison. They were the glue that kept the office together and made my job and my life so much easier. I would have been lost without them, and I just love them as employees and as friends. Speaking of friends, My freshman year college roommate and her husband are here. You'll recognize them because of the duct tape across their mouth. We have been friends since we were 18 years old. Lots of memories, both good ones and a bit of sorrow, but with genuine love and affection. Ray is a highly successful lawyer, and Kathy just retired from a lifetime of serving her community as director of Human Services Coalition of Tompkins County in upstate New York. We love each other's company and make time, like they are doing today, to be together. All the way from Ithaca, New York, Kathy and Ray Schlaughter. There are also friends from Akron who I am so happy to see here today, many friends. Pierce, thank you for speaking on the behalf of all of the chamber staff that has come through the door, all who have gone on to have rewarding careers. Pierce started working for me, as he said, on Valentine's Day, and quite frankly, it was a love affair, almost love, you know, at first sight. I love his writing, his wisdom, and his friendship. No one could say an unkind word about Pierce Reed. He was a friend to all at the court, and his involvement in the Innocence Project is such a great fit. And Mike Binger's leadership and management style, when he was at the court, brought out the best in every director. He expected the best, and they delivered. My respect for him and our friendship extended beyond his time at the court. On the national level, he is instrumental in providing courts around the country with resources for their most challenging issues. The National Center for State Courts is invaluable. I'm sorry that Mary McQueen couldn't be with us today. Mary leads the NCSC and has become a good friend. My judicial colleagues, since 2003, I have served with 20 justices on this bench. We've debated some weighty issues. While we don't always agree, I have great respect for the process and have been impressed by the commitment, the sincerity, and the dedication of these justices. I respect and admire those who can vigorously debate, and when the debate is done, walk away amicably to start the next case anew. Thanks to the retired and former justices who are with us today, especially former Justice Judy Lansinger. Judy and I became very close friends, bonding over the 2010 campaign. She is still one of my dearest friends and a tremendous sounding board dispensing great wisdom. Thank you, friend. Judy Lansinger. Special thanks to former Justice Yvette McGee Brown for leading the ceremony today. Talk about a smile that lights up a room. We didn't know each other well before she came to the court, and yes, I did call her and talked to her about the benefits of being a justice on the Supreme Court of Ohio, and I think she was hooked. But again, we didn't know each other well, but when she came to the court, but a close bond developed through mutual respect, a shared sense of duty, and certainly a shared sense of humor. Her contribution to the court was large and lasting. She has so many talents, which she continues to share both in Ohio and around the country. The legal profession would be less were she not part of it. Thank you. Thank you to Mary Amos Augsburger. I've never seen a better juggler than Mary. As you can imagine, she often must work with competing interests. Mary is an attorney in her own right, but as a CEO, she also wears the hat of employer, lobbyist, business operations, and more. She works with policy groups, legislators, and a board. She has a board of 24 lawyers. Just let that sink in. Mary has been an advisor and a friend. When judicial votes needed a home this year, Mary not only took up the project of nonpartisan education about judicial elections, she did it with gusto. Citizens in the future will have the information to make educated decisions and vote. My sincere thanks to the Ohio State Bar Association and its generous donation, which has made this portrait possible. Mary, thank you and your staff for their work, and the board, not only for this, but for so much more. And thanks to the Moyer Commission and Justin for representing this. I Well, I'll save that for later, anyway. Well, I'm honored to be the first woman in the Grand Concourse. We know it will not be the last. The doors have been opened. Those who follow deserve to know how and when we got here. They should feel our shared history, not as a footnote to men who made history alone when the doors were closed to us. Justin talked about the impression on the school children. It is equally important to me that boys recognize that women and people of color belong here. Girls know that they're smart and capable. Just ask my granddaughters, Mallory and Marin. It's important that boys recognize that girls are smart and capable, and they too can do anything. So thank you for supporting the vision of diversity and the role of the Commission in honoring history. I didn't start out to make history. It happened, and I thank God for that. I knew when I decided to run for the chief's position that I could do the job and do it well. And why? Because I had a great mentor in the late Chief Justice Tom Moyer. Governors Bob Taft, we were virtual strangers, as everybody acknowledges when we met. But again, our mutual respect for one another and your confidence in me, I think, is what was outstanding, you know, from the get-go. Confidence, I'd never run statewide before, but there I was, being part of a team, and sometimes a team has to divide and conquer, and, I would be sent out in other directions, and you might guess that Bob and I have a very different style, I learned so much, because of the opportunities that you gave me. You took a young prosecutor for Summit County and, allowed me to have a place in your cabinet as Director of Public Safety, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and as Lieutenant Governor. Again, I can't thank you enough for that opportunity. And thank you and Hope for being here. Former First Lady Hope Taft is with us. Bob and I, our professional lifetime of respect and friendship in politics, and I wish that there could be more of what we had. In the future, will they say it's possible for two people from different branches of government to disagree and still work through ways to come together to advance the common good? That is the story of my relationship with John Kasich. John brought a different style to the office of governor. There's an understatement. One that I admired. I was Chief Justice during both of his terms, and we worked together on a number of things. And at one point, I went to John about judicial raises. The judiciary, judges across the state, had not had a raise in almost a decade. Imagine. And I was afraid that we would lose the best and the brightest. Anyway, John told me the timing wasn't exactly right when I was approaching it because I was hoping to get it done in lame duck. It seems like they do everything in lame duck. Why not that? Okay, it wasn't right, and so I said, okay, I understand. I do understand. However, I'd like to have you put it in the budget. And I'd like a raise then in place in July when the budget takes place. And he looked at me and he probably thought, well, she'll never do this, but she said, sure, I'll support that if you can get the legislature on board. So I knew I had the governor on board. So all I had to do was convince the legislature. Well, I did. Senate President Keith Faber and late Speaker Bill Batchelder did come on board, and John Kasich was a man of his word. Our raises were included in the budget, 5% each year for 4 years, and we thank you, Governor. Thank you. I respect him for being open to doing the right thing and being true to his commitments. So thank you, and thank you, former First Lady Karen Kasich, for being here as well. To the judges and to the justices, I'm humbled that you have traveled to be here with me today. And thank you to my longtime friend, Federal Judge John Adams. I met John through probate court probably almost 40 years ago. I watched this man as an attorney guardian when I spent 9 years as a magistrate in probate court, and even after that. He cared for young, troubled adults of means, unable to manage their own affairs. In my years at probate court and since, I have never seen a more caring guardian of non-relatives. Those who know him as a federal judge may not know what a compassionate man he is. He is a gift. And thanks to the three Chief Justices who honor me with their presence, Chief Justice John Minton and Susan Minton, thank you for leaving the beautiful bluegrass of Kentucky to be here today. Chief Justice Loretta Rush, Chief Justice of Indiana, and current President of the Conference of Chief Justices and Chair of the Board of the National Center for State Courts. Thank you, Chief Justice Rush, for making the time. Loretta and I hit it off early on in, when we connected as Chief Justices. We have the same, I think, vision of what our role is. I think we have the vision that God put us in this role to do good. And by golly, we're going to do good. And she has, and not only within the state of Indiana, but across this country with her leadership. So the next Chief Justice that honors me with her presence is Michigan's Chief Justice Bridget McCormick. Thank you, Bridget, for being here. This region is so fortunate to have judicial leaders so committed to service. Together, we've looked for answers to our biggest problems beyond the decisions and the opinions. While each state is quite different, problems don't stop at state lines. And people confronted with problems need hope as well as help. Working together, we found solutions. In those solutions, there was hope for a better future. Bridget is also retiring from the bench this year, and in 2023, she will become the CEO of the American Arbitration Association International Center for Dispute Resolution. Finding better ways to settle disputes amicably is clearly her superpower. I might add that my colleague, Chief Justice John Minton, is also leaving his post at the end of the year, as I am. We're retiring together. Many years, many conversations, and much respect, John. Justices, judges, and lawyers, law school deans like Lee Fisher, Verna Williams, and others, court staff in all 88 counties, so many professional friendships, which became very personal over the many years at the court. There are too many to name here today, but I will think of you fondly in the days to come. I will forever be grateful for your selfless service to the judiciary and to your community. And to my colleagues who are with us today, I thank each and every one of you for being here today and for being a colleague. I am very fortunate, extremely fortunate, to have colleagues that I respect, colleagues that even though we disagree, we, are mindful, I hope, in what we have in common than what we disagree on, and that's extremely important. This career, which I think I've already established, has been more than a job. It has been my life. This life has brought me some great experiences beyond the courtroom. As Mike said, I've been to many of these United States. I've been to Morocco a couple times, the Philippines, Ireland, South Africa, and many places in between. As Lieutenant Governor, I traveled with the National Guard to meet the troops in Oman, Hungary, Germany, Nicaragua. After Hurricane Mitch, seeing the work of the Ohio National Guard in Nicaragua was inspiring. Guard's people truly use their talents in the service of others. And yes, I found many things to smile about for all the years that I've been here. I kayaked the Chicago River just this past summer. I love to fly fish, of course, and had the adventure of swimming with the whale sharks and diving in a cage with great whites who were on the other side of the bars, thankfully. In retirement, I want more adventures, especially with my grandchildren. I want to exercise my curiosity, and I want to see what's around the corner. And that curiosity has gotten me where I am today, and it will not fail me in the years to come. I did not set out on my professional journey to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but service is in my DNA, and my education, my hard work, and the opportunities along the way brought me here. History was made when I was the first woman elected to this office. I didn't feel it at the time. There was too much work to do. History made me, as they say, the longest serving statewide elected woman, which just means I'm old. Well, you know, that's not something you plan, you know, and in just over 20 days, I'll let you in on a secret, there's going to be another first. I will be the only Chief Justice, since we've elected Chief Justices, starting at the turn of the last century. There's been 10 Chief Justices. I will be the only Chief Justice that will be a retired Chief Justice that retires in office. All of the other Chief Justices, all men, have either lost at the ballot box or has died in office. And I don't will never lose another election because I'll never run again, of course. And I do plan on walking out of here in 20 days of my own volition. So I leave with a grateful heart, an eye on the future, and a smile on my face. God bless you all.
You're the best.
Chief, I hear there's no age limit on being governor, so. please join the Chief Justice in the Grand Concourse for a receiving line and refreshments. And for those watching on the live stream, a video of Chief Justice O'Connor's career entitled Raising the Bar, the Maureen O'Connor Years will follow the ceremony. Chief?
Marshal, will you adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.